Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. Very excited about our guest today. Kate Vendriaki is the director and founder of the Australian Sports Performance Network. She was a swimmer at Alabama and got into strength and conditioning as a result of an injury and hasn't looked back since. She's done a fantastic job of going around the world, having a lot of success. We're going to talk in this interview today about being an international strength and conditioning coach and how to have success within the United States and elsewhere. We're going to talk a little bit about being a female strength coach in a male-dominated profession and talk about the concept of a high-performance manager and how that could relate and potentially lead to more jobs in the United States. So very excited about this. I know we'll get something out of it, and we'll see you on the other side. Okay, I'm here with Kate Vendriaki. I'm going to butcher that all this whole time, but I'm excited to have you on. You know, we've gotten a chance to know each other over the last couple of months, and, you know, really enjoyed some of the conversations that we've had and the correspondence that we've had and some of the things that you've brought to the table and how we can make this field better. So I know our viewers are going to really get something out of this, and I'm excited you're on the show.
Thanks for having me, Coach.
You know, you're probably still celebrating a little bit from this national championship game, you know, a couple weeks ago. But, you know, in Knoxville here, we don't mention that school down south too often. But go ahead and tell everybody a little bit about, you know, yourself, how you got into the field of strength and conditioning, and, you know, what you're doing now.
Okay, well, back in 98, I got a full swimming scholarship to the University of Alabama. So I left Australia and went over to Tuscaloosa. And unfortunately, after my first year, I slipped two discs in my back. So I had to take a medical, which was quite disappointing. It was right before the 2000 Olympics. And you know, the plan was to go over to the States, get my degree, swim, improve, make the Australian Olympic team. But, you know, unfortunately that didn't happen. But as a result of my injury, that's how I got into strength and conditioning. So as most people are aware, if you get injured during the time of being on scholarship, the university has to honour your time for you to finish out your degree. So instead of going to the pool and training every day, I spent a little bit of time in the various departments within the athletic department, and I ended up settling in the strength and conditioning department for a couple of years for my junior and senior year. So that's how I really got into it. And I guess for me, my main mission was to make sure that nobody had to go through what I went through, and as I did get injured in the gym. So I guess one of the big lessons that I learned and have been able to learn from in retrospect was learning a lot about each individual athlete's background before you throw them into a big group environment in terms of learning lifts. So my background coming up as a swimmer here in Australia, I didn't really do much time in the weight room. I just did your basic, you know, lat pull down, leg extension, leg press kind of twice a week. And the swimmers, I guess, culture is doing a lot of medicine ball and dry land work on pool deck. So that's where I came from, and structurally I wasn't ready to start doing a lot of lifts with bars on my back, good mornings, things like that. So I probably was progressed too quickly into that stage, and as a result had a career-ending injury. So I have been a stickler for technique since that time, and a lot of my athletes in the past would get so tired of doing squats with broomsticks, but, you know, I really believe it pays off in the end. So that's how I got into strength and conditioning in the States. after that, after I graduated, I came back to Australia and worked in a couple of universities setting up their athlete careers and education program. And then I realized that for me to progress in strength and conditioning, either in Australia or around the world, I needed to get a bit more education. So I sourced a grad assistant position at another school back in America. So went back over down south again, University of Memphis, and I spent one of 2 years there. After my first year, I ended up getting an opportunity to go to Malaysia and work at their National Sports Institute in Kuala Lumpur, and I was able to transfer my studies to a university in Perth, Australia, that I could do online. So I was able to work in the field and study full-time at the same time. Did that for about 3 years, working with Olympic cycling and swimming programs mainly. And after the Beijing Olympics, I had about 8 athletes going to Beijing across both sports. I took on the role of high performance manager with the Malaysian Olympic cycling program, and that's how I kind of got out of the hands-on aspect of strength and conditioning and took a more supervisory role, overseeing other sports scientists putting together their programs for athlete performance. And that's how I've sure. kind of got where I am now.
And now you run your own consulting business, amongst other things, and that kind of hands-on experience and things along those lines. What were some of the things, you've had good and bad experiences in strength and conditioning. You know, who were some of the people that influenced you early on, either positively or negatively? You don't have to give names, but what were some of the things that were positive and some of the things that were negative?
Well, I guess the main thing that springs to mind, obviously, is that I'm a female in a very male-dominated industry. That's something that it didn't really bother me, but I had one particularly memorable experience just of feeling quite isolated and feeling, put down just for being a female in the industry. Lucky I've got a thick skin, and I guess being out on my own since I was 18, traveling around the world and setting up in new places, I'm quite resilient, and I've been able to just, let things roll off my back. But definitely as a female in the industry, it is quite difficult. Some great things is you do get those few people that are open-minded and just see you for who you are, that you want to learn, you want to, contribute to the industry around the world. And those are the people that you keep in touch with and that you keep with you and have them as your mentor throughout your career.
Sure. Well, that was my next question. Being a female in the field and having a high level of success that you've had, what are some of the things that you would recommend to the young Kate just now getting in the field, or a younger female strength coach that's decided this is the path that they've chosen to pursue?
Yeah, well, I think since, that was a good almost 10 years ago that I was going through that grad assistant, student strength conditioning, those roles. So I know that in the last 10 years things have changed a lot, which is great to see. But, it's always going to be a male-dominated industry. Excuse me. And, I just think whoever you are, if you want to be a great strength coach, just go out and do what you need to get that done, whether it be go through a grad assistant role or volunteer, whatever you need to do. Don't let who you are or what gender you are deter you from being what you want to be.
You mentioned earlier that you went from being an international competitive swimmer. That's your background, having some experience with some of the Olympic sports at Alabama, but then you went to Malaysia and started working with cycling, a sport that you were probably unfamiliar with when you first got introduced to that position. What were some of the steps you took early on to kind of learn a new sport and then turn around and program at an extremely high level?
Yeah, well, it was challenging. I mean, I didn't even know the name of the event, or I didn't know anything about a bike. You know, put me on a bike. I'm a typical swimmer. I'm a fish out of water. Put me on a bike and I'll fall off. So it was a completely new sport, something that I was initially intimidated by. But as I got to know the athletes, as I got to know the sport, and I was very lucky in that in Malaysia, they did have the support of the government to be able to pay for sports science and other support staff to be able to travel. So I guess for me, the best exposure was being able to go to these big events like the Asian Championships, the Southeast Asian Games, where I could actually sit and watch these events in practice, and then I'd be able to translate my practical knowledge into, you know, merging the two together to be able to write the best program for the athletes. And it's about getting to know the coaches that you work with as well, and understanding their level of understanding of strength and conditioning, and what their goals are for each of the athletes. So yeah, it was a huge learning experience initially. And then as I kind of got into the groove of it, that's where the real fine tuning came.
Sure, sure. What are some of the differences that you've seen by, you know, having to spend both time in the United States and then around the world? When it comes to strength and conditioning and program design, what are some things that you've seen from a world's perspective and then within the United States?
I think there isn't actually a lot of difference. I think all around the world we're kind of led by fads. So, you know, different technologies come up with the chains were a big thing, the elastic bands were a big thing, you know, flipping tires was a big thing. Like we tend to go through the different phases, and that's the same around the world. America tends to lead in that area. So most strength and conditioning professionals who aren't in the US will, you know, most likely be members of the NSCA. A lot of professionals working in different countries will try and get to the NSCA conference once a year, so they get exposure to what's happening in America, and then they'll take their knowledge back to their programs or their teams wherever they're working. I guess as time has evolved and more knowledge has come out just through research and science, and I guess the world becoming smaller, there's things like LinkedIn and, you know, ways that we're able to communicate and connect with people not only in our immediate environment. We're able to share a lot of knowledge and ideas with other people. So it doesn't seem to be quite as segmented anymore. Sure. This is what's going on in America. This is what's happening in Australia.
Sure, sure. You know, we've had this conversation before where I think, you know, having been in NFL Europe and spoken around the world, you know, I feel like, you know, outside the United States, the world is doing a great job of letting science do drive training. You know, everything from GPS technology and heart rate data and things along those lines that are being implemented into practices for soccer and swimming and you know, things, rugby and things along those lines. And versus the United States, you know, obviously aspects are doing great. I don't want to segment it at all, but in the United States, we do a great job of providing resources to strength and conditioning professionals and with the psychology of the athlete. It's not as clinical. It's more, you know, real hands-on feel, intuitive type of training.
Right.
And that, you know, just it's an area I think both ends, you know, it's fun to see because you're able to, like you said, through LinkedIn and Facebook and Skype and these types of things, you're able to learn so much from each other, and very exciting that way.
Yeah.
What are some challenges and recommendations you've witnessed for the Australian strength coaches or the European strength coaches trying to get opportunities within the United States?
I guess it's hard. A lot of strength coaches would love to go and work in America. I guess obviously the main thing is visa, getting a job. So that is what stops a lot of people. They think that they can't ever break into the industry in America. I would recommend trying to get to the NSCA conference. That's where you meet people. That's where you can connect. That's where you can chat, build up your relationships, and get your CSCS qualification, because that is what you need as a minimum for most jobs. Even around the world, a lot of foreign countries have that as a requirement for you to be able to get a job in their country, because they know that the NSCA standard is what it is, and if they can pass the CSCS, then they know that they're getting that caliber of a strength and conditioning coach. If you're younger and you want to do your master's or things like that, I would really recommend going that way, because you can get some, you get your degree and you get some practical hands-on experience as well. And it, a lot of times, if you've already got that on your resume and you want to move on and keep working in America, then it's easier if you're already there.
Sure, sure. Well, you know, as an employer, you know, and getting resumes all the time, and I would get numerous emails, phone calls, messages from all over the world from coaches that want to come to the United States. I got to be honest, I have no clue what the process is, and it's probably very similar the other way around if a U.S. strength coach or American strength coach would like to go overseas. What are the requirements? Is it, can you, you know, as far as going to school, getting accepted, getting a visa, maybe a travel visa or whatever, I I've gone out, spoke, and come back, and I'm not, you know, outside of a passport, I don't really know the process. What are some of the things that, if I was a strength coach outside of the United States, these are the things that I need, and maybe vice versa?
Yeah, well, obviously every country is different with their requirements. Like in Australia, it's really up to the team and the organization that you're applying to. So I guess a four-year degree or a university degree plus industry experience and certifications would go a long way. It's also a lot of personal recommendations, which does make it difficult if you don't have any connections in the country that you're going to. In Australia, jobs are very, very, very scarce in the field. In Australia, the Australian Strength and Conditioning Association, or ASCA, they've got about 6,000 registered and qualified strength and conditioning professionals who have gone through a fairly regimented coaching accreditation scheme, which is governed by the Australian government. So I'm not sure how an American qualification would translate to an Australian one. That's something that I think is an individual thing and would come down to the employer. But as it is in Australia, it's very rare for people to actually move from their role, because the jobs are so scarce, given the number of people who have qualifications. Here in Australia, we don't have a huge number of roles, primarily because we don't have the same college system. So in America, you've got, you know, five or six strength coaching positions. This is at one of the big programs in colleges. Here in Australia, we don't have sports scholarships given to college athletes. You've got your Australian Football League, the rugby leagues, league and union. You've got soccer, and then every Olympic team will have their own strength and conditioning coach. And we have a very good institute network here. So kind of like your Colorado training base, we have the same one in Canberra. That's the Australian Institute of Sport. And then every state around Australia will have their own state institute as well. So you've got about 5 or 6 full-time strength coaches based at the Australian Institute. And then in each of the capital cities, there'll be another 3 or 4 at the state sports institutes, and that's pretty much it. So it's really, really hard to break into the industry. Once you're in there, nobody wants to move.
Sure. Well, you know, like take, for example, the Australian Institute of Sport, and, you know, say I'm a young strength coach in the United States, and I'd like to go do an internship there. You know, what is the, in terms of, you know, is it pretty typical that you could come and live there for X number of months without really any kind of government type of intervention? Or is it something where you have to apply for a visa or travel visa or something along those lines, and that makes you that much more likely to be considered?
Every country does have their own way that they handle hiring, and every team does as well. So my suggestion would be, if you know what sport you want to work in, or you have a particular team that you're interested in, most teams now have their own website and their staff listed. I would make contact with the person that you want to meet with when you're going to the country. Let them know you're just coming over to travel or to visit, and you'd like to spend a bit of time with them and their team, and let things evolve from there.
One of the things we've talked about at length is the concept of a high performance manager. And can you just kind of describe what that position is, and you know, a little bit more, with a little bit more detail?
Yeah. So as you'd mentioned before, and this is something that I did notice when I left America and worked in Malaysia, and I worked in New Zealand as well, and just given my swimming background and things in Australia, science is really leading how things are done in other countries. So with that evolution, there was a need for somebody to oversee all the different sports sciences and how they were applied to the athletes. So the role of high performance manager has really evolved in the last 10 years. And I would say majority of all Olympic sports and all the professional teams, AFL, rugby, soccer, everybody, basketball here, every team all has a high performance manager. So what that person does is different from sport to sport and team to team and company to company. But in essence, the role is it's for somebody to oversee all the application of sports sciences, so strength, conditioning, nutrition, psychology, biomechanics, video analysis, sports psych, physiology, medicine, physiotherapy, everything. How all those services are applied to help the athletes reach optimal performance. And it also reduces the point of contact for the head coach or the lead coach of whatever that team is. So you think about how stressful and how many things is on a head coach's mind. They don't need 15 different people coming at them saying, oh, this athlete's got that going on, this athlete's doing this, this one's doing that. To reduce that, a high performance manager manages all the sports science and things that are going on with all the athletes in the program. They are then responsible to report everything and keep the head coach up to date with what's going on. So the head coach then only has to deal with one person. And also the high performance manager is the point of contact, say, to the national governing body. They would report to the media, and they're the first point of call for the athletes if they need anything as well.
So kind of to recap, you know, and this is very common, obviously, as you know, in the United States, where the strength coach typically has all those roles, or at least some of those roles, where they're coordinating nutrition, they're coordinating speed, strength, balance, coordination, you know, sports psychology, all those types of things. And what you're saying is that in other countries, especially the Olympic countries, there's these high performance managers that, you know, there's still a strength coach typically, but this person kind of coordinates all these disciplines and is one voice to the head coach and usually kind of the right hand person to the head coach.
To
filter out all the external and give them a one clear, concise message, kind of in coach speak sometimes. And typically, as we've talked before, typically that position is held by a strength coach versus a former sports nutritionist or a former sports medicine or orthopedist, or usually that's a strength coach, correct?
Right, it is. And that's where it's quite different. Everybody recognizes that they are specialists in what they do. So nobody expects a strength coach to have kind of a helicopter understanding of nutrition, psychology, all of the other disciplines. And having a high performance manager role lets the strength coach do their job as a strength coach. They don't have to worry about nutrition or all the other peripheral things that are going on. They can get in, do what they need to do, and have a relationship with a high performance manager where they convey whatever information that they need and know that the high performance manager is on top of things with all the other disciplines and has that ability to be able to connect the dots, I guess. So say you've got an injured football player. Everybody understands if there's an injury, they're likely to be out of training, and other secondary issues such as weight gain and things like that are going to come on board. You've also got psychological issues with an injury and dealing with the recovery process. So you've actually got a whole host of people who are involved in one athlete's campaign to get back on the field. That's the high performance manager's role, to coordinate and kind of marry all those services together to get the athlete back in 100% shape in a timely way.
Now, they'll coordinate meetings. What's a typical schedule for kind of a high performance manager throughout the week?
Well, the way that I ran things was we would meet every Monday morning, and my situation was a little bit different. I had two teams. We had a team based in Malaysia, and the head coach and the elite team was based in Melbourne. So I had a team of sports scientists in Melbourne and a team of sports scientists in Malaysia. So there was about 70 athletes in the program. It's very different just working with one sport. If we were to translate the role of a high performance manager into a college setting, I would say in a big program, you would need one high performance manager for football and another high performance manager for the Olympic sports. So it would be a massive role for one person to cover that many athletes and do it properly.
Daily task.
Yeah. And it's great for me. I try and keep in touch with what's going on in America as much as possible, just to see on the NCAA job board that there are roles coming up for nutritionists and sports psychologists and massage therapists actually being full-time in college settings. And that's something that has been in national teams and things like that in Australia and around the world already 10, 15 years.
Sure.
So that's why a high performance manager hasn't been needed in the past already over here. But I do absolutely see the need for a high performance manager in the college system.
Sure.
Another great thing for the bigger programs that do have athletes qualifying to represent America, you know, in gymnastics, softball, golf, tennis, whatever they do, you've got one person that is able to liaise with, you know, USA or Gymnastics USA, the governing bodies of those sports, to let them know how their athletes are tracking through, what kind of physical shape they're in, things like that as well. So it's doing a great service to the national teams as well.
Well, I think this is such an important point. We've talked about this. The rest of the world looks at the role of a college head strength and conditioning coach and goes, holy cow, how in the world can you possibly manage all these things? At Tennessee or at Southwater, places I've been, you know, we're talking 400, 500 plus athletes, 17 plus sports. And typically you're thrust into that role where you're kind of dealing with academics, you're dealing with social, you're dealing with the sport, you're dealing with the training, the rest of the world's looking at it, they go, y'all crazy that you don't have this position. And I agree with you. It's probably that assistant athletic director, associate athletic director role. And there's a few programs that are starting to take that path. But it's a much needed position in the United States, especially in the collegiate system, where we're doing our athletes a disservice by not having all those things coordinated. And the extra added benefit of what you said, where one person is speaking now to the coaches, you know, as opposed to all these people and getting mixed messages and a lot of CYA, kind of cover your own butt type of messages are getting sent. And so it's one of those things where, I mentioned it to the NSCA at the winter conference, the sports specific conference, that this is a great area for us to place some emphasis, because there's such a saturated market and it's around the world, 6,000 plus coaches in Australia, that we can say, here's a way for us to keep more strength coaches in the field and create positions for that practical experience. Once you kind of put in that practical time, to be able then to turn around and have that coach's ear and be able to coordinate these things that you've done kind of your whole, your whole career. So I think it's an important position. That's why I really wanted to bring you on. Tell us a little bit about the Australian Sports Performance Network. You kind of created this network, and what's its role, and kind of take us behind the scenes a little bit and say, why did you say this is needed?
Yeah. Well, one important thing to note about a high performance manager is that they are expected to know what's going on in world's best practice in each of those disciplines. So, as I'd mentioned as well, I would have weekly meetings with the staff. They would come and have a summary report of all their activity that they'd done in the previous week with the teams. And they would also present perhaps some research articles or share what they've learnt with some of their connections, say in the UK or Germany, as to what they're doing as well with their teams in their respective field. So the high performance manager is constantly getting information from their staff about what is going on in that particular field around the world, and what is needed in your own program to improve things for your own athletes. So that was a really important thing as a high performance manager. And when I moved back to Australia after finishing in New Zealand, I was the athlete performance manager at the New Zealand Sports Academy. And I guess having been in a university system in America and then in the institute system in Malaysia and New Zealand, when I came back to Australia and I set up my own consultancy, I really realized how, I guess, alone I was. I didn't have that team of sports science professionals around me to be able to pull on all their expert knowledge and apply that to the athletes. So when I started getting a few athletes coming on board for my consultancy, I realized I actually don't have anybody to refer them on to. I'm certainly not a qualified dietitian. I'm not a qualified sports psychologist. So I'm not in a position to be able to give those services to the athletes. So although I know, you know, a fair amount about all those disciplines, I also recognize that there are a lot of people out there that do have that specialty. So that's where the Australian Sport Performance Network was kind of born. I started building my own personal network just for my own clients and realized I'm probably not the only professional out here that doesn't have a support network around me. So if you're not working in a professional team or in the institute system and you are servicing clients in whatever field you're in, you're probably on your own. So that's where ASPN was born. It's kind of twofold. One is it's a directory of services for the public to access. So I remember back when I was really young and a swimmer, I woke up one day and it was a couple of days before the state championships and I just slept on my neck the wrong way and I couldn't turn left. And I was thinking, how am I going to turn my head to breathe when I'm trying to race in the state championships? And so my mum put me in the car and we were kind of driving around the neighborhood looking for a chiropractor. And I mean, that's a lot. As a parent, you want the best for your child.
Sure.
And as an athlete, you don't want anybody touching you that you don't know has, you know, obviously done it before or they're industry qualified. So I guess the directory side of the sports network is you can go to the website, look up your region, see what you need. Say you're looking for a chiro, you click on chiropractors and see who's listed in your area. There's a headshot, there's a bio about them, and it's giving people a bit more of an informed decision as to who they want to go to get their services.
Sure.
So, yeah, so that's that one side. The other side is everybody that's listed on the network, on the website, they have a members-only area where they log in and they can talk to each other. They can build up their own networks. We're going to have regional get-togethers. So we're going to have sports psychs, physios, everybody getting together and meeting each other and hopefully building a national referral system for the exact reason that I mentioned to you before. If a physio's got somebody that they know is going to get is prone to weight gain if they get injured, they actually know a nutritionist and they've met them who they feel comfortable to refer their client onto.
Sure. Well, it's extremely exciting. That's pretty neat. And it's funny. It's something that you sit back and you say, this should exist. You look around and you say, holy cow, it doesn't exist. And you had the initiative to go and start it. And it's obviously doing well. And, you know, Kate, I really appreciate you coming on. And talking about the high performance manager role, and you know, I think that's something that is truly needed in our profession, especially in the United States and around the world. You know, to create more of those jobs, and you know, we all forget that this profession, to some degree, is you know still in its infancy. You know, 50, 60 years, and I think this is a next logical step amongst some others, but I think it's one that could create quite a bit of jobs for our coaches, but it also is going to create, even more importantly, a huge resource for our coaches because you look around and you say exactly what you did. Who can I lean on? And you and I share the same common approach that this is, it's not a domestic deal anymore. It's more of a global approach to our field. And so I truly appreciate you coming on today. Where can people get in touch with you? I'll link up in the show notes the ASPN's website and Optimal Performance Services. But what are some things you might have got going on soon, and anything that you want me to kind of send people to?
Well, one of my other roles is working as a consultant with AusRecruit. So they're Australia's biggest company in helping Australian athletes get scholarships over to the US colleges. So there's a bunch of talented Australian high school athletes that are really keen to come over to the States and get their education and have the college experience. So that's something that I'm really excited about and really looking forward to giving Australian athletes the same opportunity that I had, because, you know, it just doesn't exist here in Australia. So that's one thing, ozrecruit.com. And then my own consultancy business is Optimal Performance Solutions, and then the Australian Sport Performance Network.
Well, I'll make sure to link all those up. Thanks so much for your time today. And
Thanks for having me, Coach.
Continuing to network and pick each other's brain.
All right. Thank you so much.
So before we go, I want to make sure we mention strength coach basic training. If you're one of those strength coaches overseas that is looking to break into strength and conditioning in the United States, you don't always have the opportunity to go and do an internship, and it costs you a heck of a lot more than it would cost somebody in the United States. You know, I set this program up because I would have several interns, even within the United States, that were unable to come down, make that financial sacrifice of being able to come down and do an internship with me. So what we did is we put our lectures online. It's 8 lectures, all designed to help you pursue this profession. And there's projects and assignments that go along with each. So if you're unable to make a trip over, this is probably the next best thing. So if you're interested, go to www.strengthcoachbasictraining.com and check it out.